Play with your legs. It's fine.
Yeah.
Welcome you all for Jeremy Corbyn. My name is Millie Connell. I'm a young activist within the Mansfield Labour Party, and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome on stage the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mansfield, for coming out today. Thank you, sun, for shining on us. Can I say thank you to Millie? Millie's going off to university soon. First person ever in her family to go to university. She's made the very best of her education, making the very best of her life, and we obviously wish her well in university. Yeah. I just wish that Millie and her generation weren't forced to go to university and come out with 30, 40, 50,000 pounds worth of debt because of the fees. Millie, well done you. But it's also about what we do for the future, for our young people, to make sure they don't have to make the choice of education or going into debt. It's simply not right. We're going to have to do something very different about that. I want to thank you all for coming here today. Thank you for all the work that you did in the general election. I know we didn't win Mansfield. I know that sadly Alan Meal lost his seat and lost the election. And I thank Alan for his work. But I want to say this. Alan worked hard. You all worked hard. The Labour vote went up. The Labour vote went up because you campaigned so hard. We're in a two-horse race and we didn't quite make it. But I tell you what, we're on a campaign all over the country because we put on 3 million votes nationally in the general election. We had the biggest increase in Labour votes since 1945. We showed what we as a party... When we offer an alternative, when we offer a transformational manifesto, and we did that. And so you'll be pleased, I think, I hope, I'm probably sure, to hear that this is the 50th constituency I've been to since the general election on campaigning. And we're doing that because we want to take that message out all across the country, that the election campaign might have ended on June the 9th. As far as I'm concerned, the campaign to defeat this Tory government, the campaign to defeat this minority Tory government, the campaign to defeat a minority Tory government that can find £1 billion to buy off the DUP, but not a halfpenny for nurses, started on June the 9th as well. And so we are on the campaign trail all around the country because we have an alternative to offer. And when the first vote came up in Parliament, just a few days after the election, when Parliament finally resumed, we put a chance to Parliament, to every MP who, remember, had spoken so warmly in the election campaign about the value of firefighters, of nurses, of paramedics, of ambulance workers, of police officers. They'd responded heroically, as they did, to the bomb in Manchester, to London Bridge. How they responded so heroically to all those things. So we said, how about lifting the public sector pay cap? Woo! Pretty clear choice. Not complicated to do. Because we know the consequences of not doing it. Loss of nurses, loss of doctors, loss of firefighters, underfunding of public services. We all know the consequences of it. So the chance and the choice was there. What did the newly elected MP for Mansfield do on his first vote in Parliament? His first chance to represent the people of this area? His first opportunity to go through a voting lobby in Parliament? He voted to keep the pay cap and underpay the nurses, the firefighters, the doctors and everybody else. Because that is what the Tories are about. That is what their whole economic agenda is about. And so we take the fight out to the Tories. all across the country. Now, in the general election, we were written off at the beginning, weren't we? All those media pundits that wrote us off, everybody wrote us off. Labour coming. Impossible. What happened? We used social media to encourage people to register to vote. Fantastic people like Stormzy came on board and said, we'll get him to register. He's a very nice guy as well. And he and many, many others encouraged people to register to vote. And as a result, we got 2 million more people on the electoral register. Incredible. So I thank all of you that took part in the voter registration drive, who took part in all those activities and campaigned with us on social media. The second thing we did was to go out, take our message out all across the country. I went to 100 events during the election campaign. Our public events were genuinely public events. Open-air rallies, streets, squares, parks, anywhere. And thousands of people came. There was no restrictions, no limitations. Anybody could show up, and we were happy to talk to anybody. We didn't need to get a helicopter to take us to a golf club in order to speak to half a dozen people somewhere, because we are different. Our party is different. We're prepared and want to engage with people wherever they are and whatever they want to say to us. And that's what's different about it. So we took that campaign out there. And I'm really grateful to all those people that put in so much work, not just in delivering leaflets and voter identification and doorstep canvassing, but also all those that went out and just talked to people on the buses, on the trains, in the parks, in the pubs, in the clubs, in the cafes, everywhere. Just talk to people. And so we got that conversation going. And we then produced our manifesto. I've got it here. For the many, not the few. For the many, not the few. This was a manifesto that we produced it in only 2 weeks. In effect, 2 years' work done in 2 weeks by brilliant people in our party to get it ready to go out in time. And that manifesto is transformational because it's the first time for a very long time that a political party is simply saying this: why should the younger generation, Millie's generation, going on to college and university, be told somehow or other this country doesn't have the resources to fund their education? Why should an older generation that need help and care and support be told our society doesn't have the funds to provide them with the social care that they need? Why should head teachers in schools be told, sorry, we don't have the funding to fund your school properly? And you go through all areas of public life and you look at the overall figures on wealth distribution in society. And what you see is a growth in inequality, a growth in poverty, and a growth in obscene levels of wealth at the very top end. And then the whole idea that somehow or other we are a huge threat to civilization as a whole because we're going to raise corporation tax to 26%, up from 18%, in order to pay for education, health and housing. It seems to me that some people have lost the plot. They lost the plot. Surely to goodness, in a world of increasing wealth, in a world of the most amazing technical advance, we can do a bit better than lecturing a younger generation that they're on their own and it's the Me Too generation that carries on. Surely we can and will, and so far as I'm around, always will represent the community values of our movement and of our party and of our policies that we are putting forward. So you see the banners around us here. We've got Union, we've got Unity, Unison, we've got Community, we've got the NUM. Thank you and welcome to the NUM banners here today. We've got Unite and we've got so many others represented here today because that is where we come from and what we're about as a party. So in the election, we put forward, first of all, an economic message about how our society should develop. Why is it that after the brutality of the closure of the mining industry in Britain and in large measure the closing of the steel industry in Britain. There's been so little investment. Why is it that the big employers are people like Sport Direct and McDonald's, who offer 0 hours contracts, totally unreasonable and unfair working conditions, and then get absolutely terrified when we come up with something utterly reasonable, like adherence to International Labour Organization standards in trade union law and workers' rights at the workplace? So I pay tribute to those people in McDonald's who took action this week to try to get themselves decent working conditions and decent levels of pay. And I was able to point out to our Prime Minister that for every pound a McDonald's worker earns, the chief executive earns £1,300. So after an hour of flipping burgers and you've got less than £5 out of it, he's got £6,000 and more pounds for the first hour of your shift. Is quite a big pay differential. And my very reasonable suggestion of a 20-to-1 pay ratio in organisations seems to be exceeded somewhat, where it's 1,300-to-1 in McDonald's. I think there's some lessons need to be learnt about justice, equality, the way she does the work within our society. Then when I asked the Prime Minister if she could explain to me why Mike Ashley had reneged apparently on his promise to end 0 hours contracts in his factories, well, she wasn't really able to give a very clear answer. What is it that it takes? A select committee investigation, action by Unite the Union, and I congratulate them on all the work they've done on it, exposure of those working conditions and those divisive management techniques to divide one group of workers against another and another and another. Haven't we had enough of that in the past? And we're not going to tolerate that in the future. So if she can't condemn him, I can and will, and so will all of we. Is that okay? Woo! But it's also about investment for the future. And this government made a great deal during the election campaign and before about the Northern Powerhouse, the Midlands Engine, the East Midlands Engine, and how they were going to electrify the Midland Main Line, how they were going to invest in this, that and the other. Okay, fine. Yeah, what happened? Come June the 9th, wow. Let's get rid of that lot. And then on the last day of Parliament in July, they cancelled the electrification of the Midland Main Line up to Sheffield. I've just been asked a question on this by the television, and I was asked to give an undertaking, and I give it to you as well. Labour will invest in the Midland Main Line and bring back the electrification scheme. And all those that campaigned for the opening of the Robin Hood line all those years ago, we want to extend it from Warsaw to Ollerton as well. So we actually invested in railways and public transport all across the region. But it's also about investment in industries for the future, because too many places are not getting the investment they need, because often the communications aren't very good or the support isn't there to get small businesses in. We don't have the investment strategy to deal with it. So John McDonnell's proposal, which is in our manifesto, is to set up a national investment bank covering all parts of the UK. So there will be an investment bank for each English region, as well as one for Scotland, for Wales and for Northern Ireland. And those will be regionally based banks. And so what I want to do now, while we're in this interregnum period between not winning the June the 8th election and winning the election that comes whenever it comes, that we develop the details of our policy. So take the town of Mansfield, take the district, take the region, look at the issues we need to address. The need to provide good, high-quality skilled jobs, the need for investment in those companies that can bring those about, the need to develop those industries commensurate with the skills that people have in the area. That is what we're doing now as a party, taking our policy making out to the people. For two reasons. One is the people who are most expert on is industries, jobs and services are those who work in industries, jobs and services actually create the wealth. And secondly, that those people, having contributed to our policy making, will feel much more powerful and much stronger and much more likely to support us in the future. So let's look to a future where our young people do have opportunities, do have chances, and you have a government on their side wanting to invest in what they need. Because there is so much more we need to do. Look, as I said, at the issues in education. Our children denied often decent nursery and preschool places because there's not enough of them, or because the government doesn't fund it enough. We're very serious. I want 30 hours a week for every child, irrespective of who their parents are or where they live across the whole country. Because it's a sad thing that you can almost predict the achievements of a child from where they're born and what education opportunities they get at the very beginning. Invest in the child at the youngest age, in the health care of the newly born baby, in the social interaction play that happens in the Children's Centre and the Sure Start Centres, and you begin to see how their life chances improve. Yesterday, I was at Pengreen Centre in Corby, absolutely brilliant place. It's really the forerunner of what we did, of Sure Start that we brought in. And I'm really impressed with it and spent a lot of time talking to all the parents there. And they were telling me how much support they felt they got during the time when they had very small children, sometimes small children with special needs. And so take that through then into primary school. The children are then better prepared for primary school, better prepared to be able to get the best from it. But also, I want to see the creativity of all our children fully unleashed. Children are imaginative, they have great ideas, they write poetry, they do painting, they sing, they play instruments, if they've got the chance. So Tom Watson and I have put forward a proposal, which we launched at the Edinburgh Festival, a pupil arts premium for every child, for every school in the country, so that every child will get to learn a musical instrument whilst they're in school. Because it's good for them, it's good for all of us, it'll help support local theatres and so on, but it'll also help them in maths, help them in English and so many other things. It's an add-on and a good all the way through. And properly fund our schools so that young people have that chance. Yeah. And as I said, we're talking about Millie and her future. We will, hang on, stop. Thank you. Right. That we will, of course, end university fees, college fees, bring back the EMA, and in particular, end fees for adult education, because we're a party that did so much to bring about second chance education for those that didn't do as well as they should have done or could have done in school for lots of different reasons, and we want to bring back those chances and those opportunities. I'm very proud that it was a Labour government, Jenny Lee did it, that founded the Arts Council, that set up the Open University. I want to bring back the availability without charge to adult education all across the country. People need that chance, that opportunity to learn and do things together. So it's all that in education. And I want to see a national education service, and Angela Rayner is working on this, which will ensure the proper funding of education all the way through the system and support for people. And so that the power, the family of the local education authority comes back to the fore in the management of all schools in the area, including free schools and academies. So we create the family of education. Health was a big feature in the election campaign, and so far as we are alive or exist as a party, health will always be absolutely at the core of what we do. It was Inaran Bevan and that very brave post-war Labour government that defied all the advice from the naysayers they were given. You can't afford a national health service, it's too expensive, it's too complicated, it'll never work, it won't happen. You might get people who are not really sick turning up to see the doctor and wasting the poor doctor's time. How can we possibly allow anybody to get help? Well, they stood up to all that and said, no, we want healthcare as a right for everybody. And that's what the National Health Service is about. But it's under threat. It's under threat from underfunding. It's under threat from privatisation. It's under threat from contracting out. So we now have private health companies making money out of our National Health Service and then plonking their profits somewhere in a tax haven. I'm sorry, I can't get my head around this. I pay my taxes in order that we all get healthcare. I don't pay my taxes that somebody should make a profit out of our health service in order to evade the taxation they should pay on the money that they earn. seems to me the best answer is to bring the whole thing back into public ownership and public administration. So I pay tribute to those of you campaigning on Chatsworth Ward. Well done for you on that campaigning. Make sure you win that campaign. Thank you very much. Stand up with your poster there. Where's the banner? Come on. Show your T-shirt anyway. So well done you. And John Ashworth has made it very clear we'll suspend the sustainability and transformation plans. And as we speak, a red umbrella arrives. Thank you, David. No worries. Red umbrella when it rains. Okay. Good colour, nice umbrella, unfortunate wind. It won't hit you, don't worry. Hang on, why am I holding this thing? We will end the sustainability and transformation plans and ensure that there is a rethink on the whole thing, because I'm fed up with going around the country and finding competitions and wars between different towns and cities about who should lose a maternity unit, who should lose cancer unit, who should lose a heart specialty unit, rather than looking at the other way around, who needs what and how can we make sure it actually happens. And so it's not going to be easy or simple, but let's look at it from the point of view of those that need the care and support they've got. But there's two other aspects to healthcare which have to be addressed. Neither are going to be easy or cheap, but it's got to be done. First one is social care. The government got itself in a considerable mess in the general election campaign on social care. There are over 1 million people who need social care who don't get it. They're either waiting in a hospital bed for somewhere to be found for them to be helped and supported, or they're stuck at home in often quite a vulnerable situation. It's not right and not fair, particularly for very dependent elderly people or people with special disabilities and special needs. It's simply not right. And so we'll establish a national care service, we'll put emergency funding into national care. Don't worry, it rains on the Tories as well. And we'll put special funding into social care so there will be a properly funded social care system. The alternative is to carry on with the unfairness and injustice, have a Tory government that will do sweetheart deals with Surrey County Council and ignore other parts of the country, like Derbyshire, like Nottinghamshire, like a whole lot of places. So there will be fairness brought into that, and that I'm determined to achieve. Otherwise, what happens? Families are beset with the problem of having to look after somebody in special needs, and too often it's women who give up jobs, give up their lives and careers in order to care for elderly relatives. We have to ensure the public service is there for everybody all of the time. And a society that cannot ensure its population is properly and safely and securely housed is surely a society that has got some problems. I find it, well, not depressing, it's worse than that, it's something that makes you very angry. Going around the country, talking to people who are homeless, who are sleeping on the streets, who are begging in order to find enough money to get into a night shelter in order to survive. They've all got different backstories. There's always been problems in their lives, there's been all kinds of complications and difficulties. But they're all people that can and should be able to do something. And so we have to do something a bit different. We've got to invest properly in housing. Yesterday I was at the Hope Centre in Northampton, which is a homeless centre. And they took me into a room where there'd been some art produced. It was the most amazing portraits of about 20 people that use the Hope Centre every day. It provides food and lunch and support and so on. Most amazing quality of painting portraits done by a homeless man who had suffered a stroke and learned to paint with his left hand. He was normally right-handed and developed this incredible skill. Who says there isn't skill in all of us? Should he be sleeping on the streets? Should anybody be sleeping on the streets? No. Or are we big enough as a society and a community to properly fund the shelters, ensure there is move on accommodation? Or are we going to walk by on the other side, allow the private rented sector to continue being largely deregulated with increasing rents and insecurity of tenancy, to not invest what's necessary in council housing, and to call things starter homes in the southeast itself for £400,000? Or are we going to have a government that says, we will build
half a million council homes. We will put money into local government. We will therefore be spending a lot of money in the construction industry, which will create jobs. The perfect circle of something improving and getting better for all. Because, think about it, it varies in different parts of the country, the rent issues are different, and so on and so on. It does vary, I get that, I fully understand that. But something tells me, a child growing up in an insecure private rented flat that they might lose after 6 months or a year and have to move, possibly have to move school, then a year later the same thing happens and happens and happens. A child that's changed primary school 4 or 5 times during their primary school career tells me something is badly wrong. We need that security of decent housing. We can, if we want to, invest in that rather than encouraging speculative development for off-plan sales to super-rich oligarchs of the rest of the world to buy luxury flats in London and the South East, which they keep empty in order to make a greater profit out of it. Let's do something radical and something different in housing. Surely Grenfell Tower was a message to all of us. I can see here in Mansfield you're very, very stoic and unconcerned about the rain. If you look over there, there's bright sky coming. Sometime. So, come on, hurry up. I just want to conclude with these thoughts about what we do as a party. Our foundation as a party was largely in the 19th century, a time of the most incredible political change. The Reform Act brought about a limited opportunity to vote. That, in turn, brought about some changes in Parliament. That got us the Factories Act, later expansion of the franchise, free education of a sort, and then, later on, national insurance. Incredibly brave people that campaigned, including the founder of the Labour Party, Keir Hardie, with the Pankhursts and many others, to get the right of women to get the vote. We were part of all of that process of social change. We're part of that process of social change to bring about rights and justice, not just for themselves, but for what you could do with it, how you could get a national health service, how you could get security at work, how you could get a government that invests rather than takes away, and get a government that's determined to bring about a fairer and more equal society than the perpetuation of poverty versus inequality and injustice in our society. That's why we exist as a party. Our manifesto was written in order to set out the generality of what we want to do for the many, not the few. We're now going to put the details into it. But I tell you this, a Labour government elected in Britain saying we are turning our back on the neoliberal consensus that you cut public spending, you roll back the role of the state and the community in the provision of public services in order to encourage levels of private wealth in which there might be a bit of trickle down, such as now happening from the sky above me, or you do something different. Well, we've taken the path of doing something different. And so this summer, we're campaigning around the country. This summer, we're taking that message out there. This summer, we're making it very clear that a Labour government would not be afraid to pick up the phone to Donald Trump and say, you're wrong about rejecting the Paris climate. You're wrong about the idea that we can carry on polluting and destroying this planet and not seeing the consequences of it. You're wrong on all of that. And so that is why we exist as a party. One for environmental justice, for social justice, for peace and democracy and human rights around the world. That's why we exist as a party, and that's why we work with people in other countries as well to bring that about. So I'm looking forward to continuing this campaign. I'm looking forward to challenging this lot all through the winter. And our party conference in a couple of weeks' time looks like it's going to be the biggest conference we've ever held. Thousands of people are coming to Brighton, and you'll be able to follow it all on television. They're coming with their hopes, with their ideas, with their inspiration. They're coming with their determination. We're a party of the community. We're a party of ideas. We're a party that wants to change things in this country. You here in Mansfield will be campaigning, I'm sure. You will be working with people to bring about that change. You will be protecting your local health service. You will be bringing people on board with the inspirational message that we have. That's what's different about us. I don't want any more for young people growing up in Britain to realise that somehow or other, the jobs are not going to be there for them. The public services are not going to be there for them. All they're going to get is this grinding debt because they have the personal determination to go to college or university and get a qualification from which we all benefit. Surely to goodness, in the 21st century, we can do a bit differently and a bit better than that. That's what makes us different. That's what makes us strong together. That's what makes us so united as a movement. We showed them all through the general election campaign that the experts on high got it wrong, big time. Woo! And so I want to thank you all for coming today. Thank you for all the support and help that you've given. Encourage you to do all you can as the months go on, because we're going to push this government as hard as we can. I'm looking forward to the voice of Dennis Skinner, day in, day out, challenging this government. And John McDonnell, not the Big Mac, John McDonnell, the real Mac, putting forward economic strategies that are for the benefit of all people, because that's what we're about as a party, that's what we're about as a movement. Thank you very much, and all the very best for the future.